Questions on Forgeries, Historical Errors, and Alterations of Texts. Written by Bart Ehrman. Read by Ken Teutsch. I'm catching up on posting some of the very interesting questions I've received from blog readers. This will take a couple of posts. Here are three excellent ones, all going to the heart of what it means to engage in a historical critical assessment of the New Testament. Question. Hey, Bart, I have a question about the acceptance of the Deuteropauline epistles. If they were written while Paul was still alive, it seems like he would have said those weren't his and to knock it off. If they were written after Paul had died, it seems like his closest companions would have said that Paul had already died, the epistles were fake, and to knock it off, especially if the epistles were written years after Paul had died. So my question is, why were the Deuteropauline epistles accepted? Response. It was nearly impossible for authors in the ancient world to know which books were forged in their name and circulated, except by accident. If someone in, say, Smyrna forged a book in Paul's name and he was not there in Smyrna, he may never even hear that such a thing was floating around. It turns out this was a phenomenon in the ancient world, someone accidentally hearing or learning about a book being circulated as if they wrote it and getting ticked off. The poet Martial, Galen. But they can't stop the circulation of the book. They were being copied privately in various places and found out only by accident, there are funny stories about that, by finding or learning of a single copy someplace. So there was no way to stop it, and in the vast majority of cases, the person didn't even hear about it. The followers of Paul, say 20 years after his death, would not have been able to track down all the forgeries either for the same reason. Moreover, when they ran across a letter allegedly by Paul, they normally just assumed this was one he wrote they hadn't heard of before. He must have written hundreds. In addition, whoever wrote the books forged in Paul's name after his death never said they were written last year. They would say they had been written 20 years earlier by Paul and just happened to turn up in our city now. If you want to read up on this, check out my book, Forged. If you want to get way down in the weeds on it, see my book, Forgery and Counterforgery. Question. Many of the Church Fathers' quotations of the Bible are not suitable as evidence for the biblical text because the time gap between the earliest manuscripts of those quotations and the time of the Fathers themselves may exceed 2 centuries or more. Therefore, the possibility of forgery, addition, or alteration is plausible. Yet in these same manuscripts, we find the very words of the Fathers regarding their beliefs about the Trinity and the deification of Christ. At the same time, we cite these statements of the Fathers from those later manuscripts. So why do we accept, then, the words of the Fathers found in those late manuscripts that affirm their doctrinal beliefs? Isn't it possible that forgery, addition, or alteration occurred in their doctrinal statements, just as it may have occurred in their biblical quotations? Either we accept everything or we reject everything. So why, then, do we accept only their doctrinal statements from these later manuscripts? Response. We actually can't completely trust later manuscripts for what the authors from centuries earlier allegedly wrote, even about their own beliefs. We treat all transmission issues equally because writings were sometimes doctored and sometimes they get changed in all sorts of ways, for example, to make them sound more orthodox according to later standards. But there's a special problem with scripture quotations that makes them different from doctrinal statements and that can easily be documented. Unlike most of what an older author wrote, the scripture quotations were deeply familiar to the scribes who were copying them and often in different forms from what the author originally wrote. Think, for example, if you are reading someone quote the Lord's Prayer as "Forgive us our debts," but you grew up saying "Forgive us our trespasses," it just sounds wrong. If you were copying Luke's form of the Lord's Prayer but knew only Matthew's from your worship services, you would be, and scribes were, inclined to change what they were copying to make it right. That kind of thing can be shown to have happened in the later manuscripts of church fathers. For example, when an earlier manuscript shows up that allows you to confirm your suspicion about it. And so there are scholars who devote themselves to establishing the original text of church fathers, just as there are others working on the original text of the New Testament writings. Question. You don't believe the Passion narratives to be historical. As all four Gospels include them, please enlarge on your reasons for saying this. I guess committed Christians would conclude that you have pulled the rug out from his entire mission. Response. I certainly don't dismiss the Passion narratives as completely non-historical. My view is a pretty standard one among scholars. I think the Passion narratives contain historical information, along with some information that's not historical. The issue all Gospel scholars address involves determining which parts of the Gospels and which parts of sections of the Gospels are historical, not just the Passion narratives, obviously. In broad terms, there are other things too, of course, I think it is completely right, as reported in the Passion narratives, that Jesus went to Jerusalem the last week of his life and, in my judgment, entered into the temple and caused a disturbance, raised the ire of Jewish officials in the temple, spent several days preaching his apocalyptic message, had a Passover meal with his disciples, was betrayed by one of them, arrested, put on trial by the Roman governor Pilate, and was crucified on charges of calling himself the King of the Jews. That's a lot when you think about it. I don't think the triumphal entry, the cleansing of the temple as described, shutting down the entire enterprise, the story of Barabbas and other things are historical. I explain why in my book, Jesus Before the Gospels. And so in my view, a common one among scholars, parts are historical and others not, and the task is to determine which is which.